All right. So I'm sure if you guys are here for your challenging children, we often talk about our children in some of these ways. So I don't know about you guys, but I know, and I'll tell you, I have a challenging child. And this is kind of what brought me to this work. You know, I've worked with kids and families for over 12 years now. I've worked with very vulnerable populations. And really what kind of made me want to hone in on very challenging children ended up being my own. And so I know that I found myself talking about my own child this way. And I hear a version of at least probably one of these at least every day that I'm working with parents that talk about their kids. When they come in to see me initially, he just loses it randomly for no reason. We ask him to do something simple, something he should be able to do. He just can't even do that. Everything sets her off. We've literally tried everything. There's usually a literally in there. You always hear the literally. I talk to her about her feelings, but it makes no difference. He hits his little sister, even though I've explained it's a no-no, you know, the gentle hands. We've given timeouts, tried to send him to his room, taken his toys away. He doesn't care about any of that. I can't reward that behavior. Go to the next one. So really we find ourselves saying, okay, so how do I know if my child's behavior is normal? A lot of the questions that I'm asked is, okay, so, you know, my child hits, is that normal? Or my child's teacher, you know, has been telling me that my kid's been biting, should I be worried? Well, one of the things is, you know, why are you asking the question? Just ask yourself, why am I asking the question? Is it because I'm, you know, embarrassed of my child? Is it because, yeah, this happens all the time? Is it because, you know, I'm really worried about my child? Do I need a diagnosis? Do I need services for my child? Am I really scared? Like, am I just really worried about the future? You know, that's kind of the first thing that I really want you to be thinking about. You can go to the next. Okay. So when you start to notice patterns of bad behavior, and so if I say bad, we're just using the word bad because children look bad. When they're challenging, when they're struggling with something, they look bad. The kids are not bad. We know that. The kids are not bad. They look bad. So we'll just be clear about that first. When you see expectations that are unmet predictably. So the expectations are met predictably. Not that you can say on Fridays at 2, I know that expectations won't be met. But you can predict that expectations will be met, will be unmet. The same problems are happening over and over again. When you start to see that, you know, kids are struggling in one area and it kind of spills over into other areas, so you feel like, oh, if I could just fix this one thing, then they wouldn't struggle in this other thing, and so it starts to be this domino effect. You know, you'll start to see their self-esteem, like, I'm bad, all the kids hate me at school, the teacher hates me. I know my own child was starting to, you know, the kids didn't want to be around him. It was preschool. And they were like, oh, you're the bad one, you're the bad one. And he was starting to feel really bad about himself. Of course, when there are safety issues. And if home is just not a happy place, you're just like, we're miserable, we're all just miserable. I think you can probably agree, you've got a challenging child at home and we probably should take a look at it. All right, so I think I've decided my kid is really struggling. So now what? All right, so here's the deal for today. There's two things that you need to know, and there's two things that you really need to be clear on. And the first is how you think about your child's behavior is going to absolutely drive what you do about it. Also, a lot of us come to things like this, and I know for me, pulling out books, going to talks, going to presentations, just looking for any information that I could get, I just want to know what to do. Tell me what to do. Tell me, give me a list. If they do this, I'll do this. You just tell me, right? I mean, you're here. You want to know. So I'm here to convince you by the end of today that number one is actually more important. You're probably like, oh, landlady, I want to walk out of here. Don't walk out of here. I'm going to convince you that number one is more important by the end of today. So remember, you're on the same team with your child, it can be very easy. The more stressed out you get, the more overwhelmed you get. I mean, they just start seeming like the enemy. You're like, I mean, I don't know. You get to a point sometimes you're like, I hate them. Like, I can't even deal with this by the end of the day. I mean, maybe you don't. Just me. We're going to talk about taking a collaborative approach. Now, we're talking about young kids, right? Some parents, they really don't like it when they hear that. I'll sit across from families, and they'll say, I'm not going to let my kid rule the house. You think I'm going to let them call the shots? Well, I didn't say you were giving the power to your child. It's collaborative. A partnership, and remember, we keep coming back to this theme, fear is powerful, and we really want to be aware as you're going through this process and as you're interacting with your child, the impact and the role that fear plays in what you do. So in the end, if you think about, what is it that I want? What is it that I'm trying to do here? We get really wrapped up in the control thing. Like, I'm really scared. I'm really worried. I just need to get this kid under control. This kid needs to listen to me. I'll do whatever I need to do to get that power back. We got to be mindful of that because we're going to start to lose sight of what are my expectations. Why do I have these expectations? Why are they benefiting my child? What is my role here? Because that fear will drive you in the wrong direction. So just keep that in mind. Oh, this is the weird slide, sorry. So you can just go through all of them, it's fine. So again, kind of going back to that slide where, you know, we say these things, we find ourselves thinking about our child like they do things for no reason. They should be able to. Everything sets them off. I tried talking about their feelings. I'm going to stop on the feelings one for a second, because if I don't, then you guys will think that I'm the most insensitive person. I'm not saying that you shouldn't care about your child's feelings. But what I'm saying is, when you spend time thinking that a conversation about your child's feelings is going to change their behavior, you have to remember, talking about feelings doesn't solve the problem. And so I kind of like to give an example of that. So for instance, and I gave this one at the talk I did on Monday night. So, and this happens in my house. I like my husband to take out the trash. I don't ask him to do much. I feel like the trash is fair. And so usually this happens as well. I'll be cooking, and I really hate dealing with meat. I like to eat it. I don't like to cook it. And so I like the trash can to be available for me to stick the meat in the trash can. And when I look at the trash and all of a sudden I realize it's full. I can't stick this gross empty container that had like hamburger or something in it in the trash. And so I say, husband, could you take out the trash, please? And he looks at me and he kind of knows, like, I'm not all that happy. So if he came over to me and he goes, you look really frustrated, I feel like I would probably be more frustrated. Actually, I guarantee you I would be more frustrated than I was to start with, right? And is the trash out now? No. The trash is still full. The thing's in my hands. And we talked about my feelings, which actually made my feelings worse. That's actually what goes on with your child. It's like, that's great. You're telling me what my feelings are, which may or may not be correct. And yet, the problem's still there, and your child still feels that way. So, again, I'm not telling you not to care, but whenever you're trying to, like, solve these problems and you're trying to figure out, okay, what do I do about this? Maybe just, like, we're not going to stop on feelings is my point. I tried to tell him. I've taught him. I've told him so many times. Okay. My response to that is it working? You've told him 100 times. I hear you. You told him 100 times. That's not working. So clearly there's a problem, right? We're not going to keep telling your child. We're going to try something different. I hate attention seeking. I hate when people say that. I'll just tell you, it sounds like nails on a chalkboard to me, because Would you not want your child to seek attention? I think it would be sad if a child was sitting in a corner not wanting any attention. I think that we would actually worry about that. And so if you're saying that your child is seeking attention in a way where you're looking for a way to give a child attention, that's great. If you're saying, I'm not going to give him attention because he just wants it, like, stop and think about that for a second. I don't know about you, but that doesn't actually make a lot of sense to me. So we kind of want to stay away from that as well. Okay, that's my child, just saying. So, your mindset is so important. What are you thinking when your child appears bad again? Really be mindful of that. It's kind of where you want to start. Where are you starting with this child when he's doing this again, when she's up to this again, when, oh my gosh, I'm so tired, I just want to go to bed. Are you seriously doing this again? What's going through your mind? So you saw the title of the presentation. I don't know if you got like really excited, so I'll just apologize now. But actually, I was just kidding. I don't have 11 proven ways to eliminate bad behavior. I just wanted to get you excited about it. But the good news is that you actually only need to know one. You actually only need to know one. So while it may be disappointing that like I don't have 11 ways, you actually only need one. So it's better news. So Dr. Green's whole thing is kids do well if they can. Kids do well if they can, not if they want to. Okay? So a lot of times we can get wrapped up in my kid is manipulating me. They just want to drive the boat. They just want to call all the shots here. And that is, without saying it in words, it's kind of telling us that you feel your child is choosing their behaviors. They're choosing to not do well. They're choosing to not meet expectations. And Dr. Green says, and you'll find when you do these things that we're going to talk about today, you'll find that it's not true. Persistent bad behavior is a sign that the demands of your child's environment exceed their ability to meet the expectations of their environment. So whatever their environment is, whether it's their school environment, whether it's the home environment, whether it's the bedtime environment, whether it's the breakfast routine, whether it's getting out of the house in the morning, whatever this environment is, the expectations in those moments exceed their ability, their skills, their developmental capacity to meet them. So good. Okay, so this is kind of fell off of there. Sorry about that. So basically, there's unsolved problems getting in the way. The expectations exceed their skills, and then you get the bad behavior. I don't know how that happened. So look at the preschoolers, my preschoolers. They're so adorable, right? They're so cute. They're so adorable when they're smiling in this rare moment. This has never happened again. Ever. That's why I'm so proud of it, and I can put that in my, like, never, ever. So, they're so cute. And then this. Preschoolers are the perfect portrait of executive function contradiction. Okay? So I start talking about executive function, and it sounds almost like, ugh, like I can't listen to that. That sounds like something that doesn't apply. Right? That's something that like people who like study that or like I can't even listen to that. But executive function is so important when you start to take a look at what's my child able to do? What are they even supposed to be able to do? Right? So developmentally, say a child that's between 5 and 7 years old, they wouldn't even be expected to have a good control over regulating their emotions. If they were like, according to the books, right on track with managing their emotions and being able to say, oh, I'm getting too worked up right now. I'm going to take a moment. We wouldn't even be able to expect a 5 to 7 year old to do that. And that's a big range, 5 to 7. That's like a kindergartner, second grader, right? That's a big range of expectations in school between kindergarten and second grade. So automatically we're creating these expectations in environments that kids may developmentally, just naturally, not even be able to meet. And when they don't, what do? Oh, you don't get to clip up. Like you don't get, have you heard of clip up in classrooms? We'll get to that. Sticker charts, these things. You don't get to go on that field trip. You don't get this reward on Friday afternoon because you lost it on Wednesday. But the kids that are lucky enough developmentally to be able to like calm down or stay more calm, well, they got the reward. Isn't that sad for the kids who just happen to not be there yet? It makes no sense. But that's what we do. That's what we have done. That's just what people do. And so the amazing thing about what Dr. Green has kind of come on the scene and said is we got to stop. We have to stop this. Kids look bad when they don't have the ability to do well. So what do? Well, we teach them skills. If a kid can't read, you don't punish them. You teach them to read. It's the same thing, right? Okay. Oh, actually, you know what? I'll go over this real quick. So kids can understand, they can begin to understand what's right and wrong. You know, the gentle hands thing. Kids know not to hit very early on. They know that it doesn't feel good for other kids because they don't like to be hurt. A child understands very early on that they don't like to get hurt. They fall. You know, they're crawling, they're walking, they're falling. I don't like to get hurt, therefore, I don't want to hurt people. But they can't follow through. They haven't developed that yet. So complete contradiction. They can have like this very basic planning, reasoning ability. Okay, mom says I have to leave this play date. She's right here. She's kind of like coaxing me out the door. But then you have this like, oh, but Jimmy has this toy that I just can't help it. I got to stop and play. Like you're literally on your way out of the house to like go home from this play date and your kid sits down and starts playing. And then you're like, are you serious right now? I have to do this again. This immediate gratification is so much stronger than they're like, mom says we're going to the door to leave. That means nothing whenever this need for immediate gratification kicks in. And this is kind of the same thing. They consider doing things. They have intentions to do it. But really, impulse control, that frustration thing, those things are so much stronger. And they just come in and they sabotage those things. And this side, this is like what we want so much. Like we set expectations that require like perfection over there. This is where they're perfect at. Like they're great over here, right? So it's like complete contradiction. So think about yourself. Something like making it to where you need to go. Like you got to go to the grocery store. Like you have no groceries in the house. If you could do it, why would you instead choose to throw yourself on the ground and scream and cry, not do it, and then not feed your family? Like, why would you just choose that if you like going to the grocery store? If you could do it, if it was enjoyable, you wouldn't choose it if the other way was easy for you. Humans just aren't like that, and neither are kids. Right, like humans in general, and think about that. We don't think a lot of the times, we don't treat kids like they're humans like us. We think that they can't do things because they don't want to and they're different. But they're not. They're not much different than us. They're still developing, just as we're still developing. We're trying to do things that we can't, so we're trying to learn and get new skills. They're doing the same thing. This kind of reinforces that. All right. So this, I think, is a really powerful thing to learn. Dr. Green, he's not all that big on diagnoses, which can either make you feel a lot better or might rub you the wrong way. But what he kind of boils it down to is, are you lucky or are you unlucky? Good parenting means being responsive to the hand you've been dealt. So what does your hand look like with your behaviorally challenging child? So why are parents of children with these behaviors lucky? Why would they be considered lucky? If your child cries, pouts, whines, withdraws into the corner, doesn't want to talk, walks around sulking, why would these be the lucky kids? Why would you be the lucky parents? Well, those behaviors, they're going to elicit empathy from their teachers. They're going to elicit empathy from adults. Those are the behaviors that are going to be like, what's wrong, Johnny? Tell me about your, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, we're more likely to think we need to solve a problem there, naturally, with these behaviors. But, next one. If you're unlucky and you happen to have kids who have these behaviors, screaming, biting, kicking, swearing, hitting, throwing, and this kind of, they typically increase as the child gets older. It doesn't always correlate with age, but that's usually what happens because, after all, when we ignore the problem longer and longer and longer, kids get more frustrated. Kids get more hopeless. We lose kids. We'll lose kids. And that you'll see, you know, 18, 19, like they'll start dropping out of school. That's whenever you see, you know, teen pregnancy skyrocketing. And it just gets worse and worse. So destroying things, spitting, severely injuring self or others. So then you hear the substance abuse, ending somebody else's life, or trying, ending their own life, or trying. Well, these behaviors, they'll get your kid thrown in timeouts, right? Consequences, they don't get the rewards. They get the detentions, suspensions. Hey, they can't do well in school, just throw them out. You don't need to teach them how to do well in school. Just get rid of them until they can just magically do well in school when they're not in school, and then just bring them back in. That'll work, right? They get thrown to the ground by adults, placed in locked facilities. And you can go to the next one. So your child may not be here yet, but think about this. 15 states in the U.S. still use corporal punishments. They're paddling kids still. And 7 additional ones, they don't really tell you if it's okay or not. They're not really concerned about it. So over 110,000 students are being paddled every year. That to me is mind-blowing. I don't know if it surprises you, but that really blows my mind. So I feel like it must be working because you can kind of read these a little bit on your own. You can look at them a little bit later. I don't need to go down through them. But these are all where we're losing kids. You know what I mean? And so it starts with, you know, our children are kind of like frustrated, they're impulsive, and we start punishing them. And then they get more frustrated, and we start really punishing them. And then schools do the same thing, right? Eventually, aren't you going to get frustrated? Aren't you going to give up? Aren't you going to think, nobody cares? Why should I care? Right? And then this is what's happening. So it's kind of where we're at. Doing well is preferable to doing, like, why would you want to not do well? It doesn't feel good. Doing well is intrinsically motivating. If a child can do well, they'll choose it because it feels better than even getting a reward. They would rather have doing well and feeling good about it than 30 more minutes of Xbox time, right? If a child is struggling to read, would you punish her? No, you teach her how to read. Rewards and consequences don't teach skills. They don't solve problems. So if you are targeting the behaviors, if you're saying, I want to see these behaviors change. So I'm going to manipulate the behavior by imposing these rewards, like bringing you along, come on, you can do it, or saying, scared straight, you're going to get this punishment, there's going to be these consequences. Kids will try because they want to do well. They want to please you. We're missing a lot of clues that tell us that our kids are trying. So they try, they try, they try. They're white knuckling it is what they're doing because they don't have the skills that they didn't have in the first place to do well. They're going to let go, right? You can only white knuckle it for so long. So they're going to let go, and then it gets worse, right? Solving the problems and teaching the skills eliminates the problems. It eliminates the bad behavior. It's not getting in the way anymore. You're not going to see it. The rewards and punishments appear. You may be like, yes, this is working. We're on a roll. We got the sticker chart. We're all set. You got your little, like, we're into, like, the littlest pet shop things, you know. I just don't get it. So the behaviors will return again because the child still doesn't have what they need in order to be successful. And then it's worse because this is also what I hear a lot. I know he can do it because I saw it. He did it for 2 weeks. So now he just wants more rewards. He's saying, oh, I saw how I can get what I want. I just stopped doing what mom says. I stopped doing what dad says. I stopped doing what teacher says because then they'll give me a reward. Again, the reward is not preferable to just doing it and moving on and feeling good about it. A child, if they're not sophisticated enough to have the skills that are necessary to do well, they're not sophisticated enough to manipulate you. It's just not possible, right? We don't realize that because we get really frustrated and we get really upset and we get fearful and angry. And what we do is we lose sight of the reality of kids and where they're at. So the ultimate kind of like golden way of being successful is using our words. Right? When we can use our words to express how we feel, we can be successful. It's a lot easier. The lucky behaviors and the unlucky behaviors, all of them are ways to say, I need help. So if you see a kid that can be like, hey, can you help me with this? I'm starting to get frustrated. If you see a kid spitting, kicking, biting, turning over tables, telling you no, throwing themselves down in Target and refusing to leave. We did that a lot in my family. Or crying, being quiet, not wanting to talk about it. Honestly, it's all the same. It means the same thing. But we treat those three things very differently. We reward the yellow. We kind of are a little gentle with the lucky. And we punish the red. But the sad thing is they're all the same. All right, so here's what, this is probably where a lot of your questions are going to come from. This is what I hear a lot. So is my child hitting a problem? It's usually there's some complicated circumstances behind these things. My child's preschool teacher told me that my child's biting. Is biting normal? What age do tantrums start becoming abnormal? All kids have tantrums at some point, right? My kid's just testing limits. Can you help me figure out if it's a problem? My kid is really independent. Like, that's not a problem, right? But I don't know how to make it so that they can be independent and, you know, we don't have problems. These are hard to solve, right? We don't. But ultimately what it comes down to is if your child could do well, could just meet the expectations, they would. So we got to figure out what to do about that. All right. So technical versus adaptive. When I talk about technical means if you've got like a technical culture at home, schools will often have a technical culture. It kind of means, okay, when a kid does this, we do this. If a kid does this, we do this. This is the punishment we assign. This is, you know, how we do things. It's very prescriptive. If you've got an adaptive environment, and this is kind of where, when you find yourself clicking, say with a preschool or a, you know, an elementary school or a school, where you feel like, wow, this is really working out for us. This just seems like a really good fit. Odds are they've got an adaptive culture there where they kind of look at what's coming at them. How's a kid doing on a day-to-day basis? Is a child having a bad day today? You know, you don't prescribe, you know, B to A if the child's B is just today because they're having a bad day. Who knows? It's very adaptive. You know, if you're going to have a technical culture environment at home, then you're not going to be able to solve problems. You're not going to look at what skills do I need to teach my kids. You're just going to be solving behaviors. Kind of the same for school and academic culture. So how much time do you have in the moment, right? You see your kid acting bad. You see a crisis happening. Do you have to solve every problem in this, like, oh, what skills are like, I don't know. Like, what is this deep thing? Sometimes I just got to get out of the house, right? I was giving a talk on Monday, and I was almost late because my child wouldn't get in the car. I had to take him to the babysitter, and he was like, nope, I want $100. And I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, one, I don't have $100 to give you. And two, I need to go. Like, this is not possible right now. And I think that if I would have had $100, he would have had $100 because at that point, I just need to go. And so my point with this is, look, you got to do what you got to do sometimes. You got to get through. You're only human. There is no perfect way to deal with your child day in and day out. And when you find yourself in the heat of the moment, you just got to get through it. When you're identifying problems and you're looking at the skills that your child needs to do well, this is all done when it's quiet, when it's calm. You're not going to be talking to your child when they're in crisis. You're not going to be, you know, like decompressing with your child. Like, now that you're sitting, let's talk about your tantrum. No, you don't need to do that because these things are very predictable, okay? Does this apply to all kids? Rewards and punishments do work for some kids. Some kids, they just need a little bit of pushing. It's a little bit easier for them. They don't have the skills they need, but it's fairly easy for them to learn, right? You may be able to use just the typical, hey, you know, can you just, like, get out of bed? I know you're tired today. Get out of bed. You can have, like, whatever you want for breakfast, like, whatever. And then it doesn't happen again, you know? So this is not, hey, this is every kid now. You're doing this with every single child. You might have one challenging child and one that just seems to really just do what you need them to do. You may find yourself dealing with your children differently. That's where fair comes into play, because I get that a lot too. Well, it's not fair. This kid got this and the other got this. My response is, fair's not everybody having the same thing. It's everybody having what they need when they need it, right? So you can say to one child, hey, if you were struggling, and you can kind of cite an example, when you were struggling with this, I made sure that you had this. So Johnny's struggling, and I want to make sure that he has what he needs too. That's what fair is. Here you go. So here we go. So I don't know where to start. What do I do to actually incorporate this into what we're doing at home? Dr. Green is so great with providing us with what we need to learn this way of being. His website is up here, livesinthebalance.org, and there are videos on this website. You can see Dr. Green himself doing this with families and kids. He's got a podcast. I listen to that in the car. I've learned so much from it. I hear parents calling in, and I'm like, oh, what's he going to say about this? Like, there's no way. I don't know what he's going to say. And he's got, like, the perfect the perfect solution for what's going on. Because it's consistent, it works. It's just, it makes sense. So we'll have to kind of blow through this a little bit. And that's, again, I realize that we're going to be going through this kind of technical part of how to do this with kids very quickly. So I'm acknowledging that because you have the resources to learn this. The biggest part of what you need to know is the way you see challenging behaviors will absolutely impact whether or not you can get rid of the behaviors. That's the most important takeaway. And you can't legitimately do any of this until you buy into that. You have to adopt that mentality. And if you decide to cherry pick, where you're like, oh, but swearing. Nope, I can't buy in on that. It's not going to work for you. You know what I mean? You have to buy into the fact that all of these behaviors you're seeing are red flags, that there's an expectation, there's a skill that's not there, there's something that your child's struggling with, they're not choosing it. So there's three parts. The interesting thing is the first two involve listening. You don't actually do anything. You aren't imposing anything until the third step, which is so different from what we normally do. We're like right in there, like you're going to do this, and first I say this, and I'm the one that decides. It's so different. First step is when we gather information, you're showing a lot of empathy. Second is defining the problem. Your concern gets to be on the table, but we're making sure that we get the child's concern and we help them figure out, because a lot of times they don't know what it is. We help them figure out what their true concern is, what's getting in their way. And then the point is inviting the child to brainstorm with you. Hey, your problem is this, your concern is this, my concern is this. Can you think of something we can do that would help address your problem and my problem? So, first and foremost, you have to be solving the right problem. If we just think we always know the problem, oh, I know they're just doing this because. Well, I know they're just doing. You don't know if you're solving the right problem. Your child is the absolute best source of information, and there's a way to talk to them that'll help you figure that out, and there's a way to not talk to your child. So, a neutral observation. Hey, you know what, buddy? I've noticed having a really hard time keeping your hands to yourself whenever you're playing with sister. That is an observation of the expectation that they're having a hard time meeting. Expectation, keeping your hands to yourself when you're playing with sister on the floor, after school, whatever. Make it as specific as possible. Not, I've noticed you've been hitting your sister. Nobody wants to talk to you about that. You know what I mean? If even like adults, if I say to you, I've noticed you've been doing this like really unattractive behavior, whatever that is, you're not going to sit down and process that with me. You're going to be like, I don't even want to be around you right now because you're being critical of me, you know? So considering the age, verbal expression, timing, all this, you know how to talk to your child. You know what works. You can do this with kids that are nonverbal. How do you communicate with your child? And this is all done not in the heat of the moment. And there's usually a time when your child's more likely to connect with you, whether you have that special time before bed, whether it's breakfast. There usually is a moment where your child is more likely to open up to you than not. Parents get stuck on this. It's hard to talk to your child without being authoritative. It's hard to not talk about behaviors when you're trying to solve behaviors. They'll usually say, I don't know. Hey, what's up? I don't know. It's not over at that point. You just have to get good at it. It's really hard. Like if they're just silent, you're really thinking, aren't you? When they start to trust you and they start to be like, she's not yelling, or she didn't say what she usually says, or she's opening up the floor here, obviously in their way of thinking these things. You're asking them, which part of this is too hard? You know, if they're like, it's just too hard, which part? You're continuing that conversation. You're opening it up. They're not used to seeing that, most likely, if you're where I was, and really just pretty much screaming at them most of the time. That's what they are expecting from you. And they're going to start to trust you, and ultimately they want to please you. They want to do well. They want to talk. they just don't know how a lot of the times. So that's kind of where you're going with this. This is the most difficult part, and we want to skip over it because it doesn't feel good when we can't do it. It feels pretty bad. This is where parents will come back into my office, and they're angry. They're really mad at me, and they'll either quit therapy or they keep going, and they stick with it. They might quit for a while, and then they'll come back. But they'll usually say things like, they're just like saying these things that don't make sense. My kid's just making up stories. They're lying. I don't believe a word they say. Because you're finally listening to your child, and they don't really know how to say what's going on in there. This takes practice for everyone. Don't underestimate them. They can learn this. You can learn this, and they can learn this. We already kind of went over don't talk about the behavior. That intrinsic motivation, it just keeps coming back. Once you're fairly certain your child's true concern has been identified, you've clarified, you've reflected back, you know, keep going back. So let me get this straight. Let me see if I have this so far. Reflecting back, did I miss anything? Make sure you're doing that as you go along. They feel heard. They'll add things on. You're kind of getting them in that space where they're really exploring. That's an executive functioning skill. Getting your child to talk outside of the present moment. Getting your child in their mind to think in the past. Like, okay, I'm not here right now. I'm thinking in this other time and space. That's an advanced executive function skill. And you want to build that up. That's like a muscle. You're helping them develop that. They'll be able to solve their own problems eventually if you help them with these skills. This is, again, where it kind of comes back to, are you clear on your concern? Are you making your concerns, are they kind of getting jumbled up into your fear? Is it, well, I want you to sit for dinner. We're having family dinner, so you need to sit. I want him to sit because why is it you want your four-year-old to sit for family dinners? Be clear on it. Because you're going to have to explain it to your child in a way that creates intrinsic motivation for your child. Now, it's up to you. You're driving the boat. You get to choose what your expectations are for your children. But I would say, with a little bit of caution, pick and choose your battles. And make sure you can frame them in a way where your child can kind of understand it and it really addresses your child's concerns. So your child's hitting sister. Well, my job as a mom is to teach you not to hit. Your child has never been a mother, most likely. Your child does not have any kind of motivation to help you be a good mom because that's just not even on their radar. They don't have that ability. But if you've worked with your child to really get that problem out into the open, your child's explored. What is this? Well, I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated because I don't want her to take my toys. I just got home from school. I'm tired. I want to play with my toys by myself. Sister's taking them. If you're like, okay, I want to make sure that you don't get frustrated and you have some alone time. And also I want to keep your sister from getting hurt. That's something your child can understand, and your expectation is still met. You don't want to be hit because your sister's not getting hurt, so that she doesn't get hurt. So there's a difference there. this kind of gets complicated. We don't have too much time to go into this. So just keep in mind, you're collaborating with your teammate. You're getting your concerns on the table. And ultimately, you want to invite your child to try to be creative and think of something that can address these concerns. Back room. I will say that one of our biggest problems was getting out of the house in the morning to make it to kindergarten on time. And it took us a while to get good at this. And I mean, even then, it's not like we're perfect. But the time when I was so impressed with my own kid was Hey, started out the conversation. Hey, buddy, you know what? I've noticed you're having a really hard time getting out of bed on time in the morning and, you know, getting out of the house. There were a lot of different problems to solve. Ultimately, he came up with his first suggestion was, I don't want daddy to get out of bed till I leave in the morning. Well, I didn't know that my husband, in his grumpy state, in the morning, was kind of setting my son off a little bit. And that was just putting him in a mood, and then he wasn't doing things. He was just like, it was terrible. And I said, well, my concern is, if daddy didn't wake up, if he didn't get out of bed until you left, daddy would be late for work, and we can't have that. So let's talk about this. And so we kind of negotiated a little bit, and it turned out, yay for my husband, he didn't have to do anything in the mornings. It was okay with my son if daddy just stayed away from him in the morning, right? Like, they didn't cross paths. That was my son's suggestion. He's like, how about daddy just stays away from me? And I'm thinking, what's your initial reaction? Like, if you're not in this state, no, absolutely not. Because daddy needs to help me. I can't do all this to myself in the morning. Now I got to get up an extra hour early, like, because I got your sister to get ready. I'm thinking that. That's like, so wanted to say it. But I step back and I'm thinking, this child is saying that he feels this will solve his problem. He came up with this. He went through this work, told me something I didn't know. I did not know that's what he was struggling with. And he's saying this will solve his problem. Now, not my first choice in terms of how to solve it, but hey, let's try it, because if it works, he's going to feel really, really good about himself, and I'm going to feel really good about the way this is going, and we're not going to be tardy every day. So we tried it. He told me to set his alarm. He wanted to get up earlier. He decided what time he wanted to get in the shower. I was in charge of telling him all these milestones in the morning that he wanted to meet. He had no motivation to do that before. It was pulling teeth to get him to move from bed to table to shower to clothes. I mean, it was excruciating. And he picked times, and I was in charge. I told him what times. It was a different story the next day. And he actually, the night before, it was really on his mind. He came out of his bed at, it was like 12:30, probably, came into my room and said, Mom, did you set your alarm? Did you set your alarm for earlier? He was so worried that I wouldn't remember to do this, because he wanted to do well. He was like, I think this will work. And it did. And there were times where I wasn't able to get out of bed, and the mornings fell apart because I messed up. And you know what I had to do? I had to apologize to him because I dropped the ball. I was like, buddy, I'm so sorry. This was my fault. I didn't get out of bed in time. And he held me to it. He held me to it. And when I mess up, our mornings don't go well. And when he messes up, our mornings don't go well. But he did that. And it was a really great moment for us. So you can probably do this yourself. We'll kind of blow through a little bit. Troubleshooting, make sure you incorporate that. I said to him, listen, if this doesn't work, it's okay. We'll try it. If it doesn't work, we'll come back to the table. We'll come back, talk about it, and figure out, we'll just tweak it a little bit. Because you don't want to set them up for failure. That's what we're used to doing. I mean, like, see, that didn't work. We're going back to my way. You don't want to do that. It's not a quick fix. Just avoid those over there. We kind of already got there. If you're compromising, it's not in that your expectations are going to be met. You're compromising in how they're being met. So I didn't want to get up earlier. I didn't want to do everything myself. I didn't want to let my husband off the hook. But ultimately, the gift that I got out of that was 10 times more valuable than having to change the way I did it. Just be careful. Fear and control, just be careful. You got to let those go. Flexibility, it's not bad. It's not bad if you do it the right way. It's not compromise if everybody's concerns are being met. This process helps to develop those skills. If you're aware of the skills that your child needs to develop, This process will help, and there are other ways to do that too. There are other ways to develop kind of like those executive functioning skills, the impulse control, flexibility, frustration tolerance, those transitions and stuff like that. So you can just kind of like, yeah, go through all of them. So how teachable are some of these skills at your child's age? This is where, hey, if you love parenting books and you're always looking for stuff to read, read up a little bit about what is normal for my child and how can I meet my child there, not comparing my behavior and trying to snuff out that behavior, saying, oh, well, my child really like shouldn't be expected to meet that expectation. So we need to rearrange things. Could you rearrange things in your house? Could you make it so that you gate off sister? Sister's behind a gate for a half hour so that your child can play. I mean, sometimes parents think that these things are bad. Like, people don't do that. Well, maybe you do if you want things to be quiet. the mealtime thing. I mean, I don't know if any of you guys struggle with the mealtime thing, but that causes so many problems in houses because people think that there's no time to have family meals. We're running out of time. My kid's 4, and we're never going to share family meals. We're never going to bond around a table because my 4-year-old is running around with their peanut butter and jelly playing. And it's like, no, you guys, there's so much time for that. If your expectation is that your child eats dinner, then playing and eating, your child will self-regulate food. When they're hungry, they'll eat. You don't have to make food this emotional struggle like, oh, you'll eat and you won't. People just ask you for food when they're hungry. It's okay. And the family dinners, you've got a long time to make that happen. And there's research that shows once a week for eating dinner as a family, even if you all take your plates to the couch and eat, that's actually really beneficial in terms of getting what everybody's looking for out of family dinners. I shouldn't say everybody, but most people do. And so here's some additional resources. I think we have some overlapping. This first book that I have on here is my favorite book in the whole wide world. It's really hard to find. It's out of print, that's why. But my copy has, I think it's from like Kansas City Library, is, you know, a used copy. And it kind of goes through that thing where the bear has a problem and he goes through and everybody thinks they know what the bear's problem is. And so they have all these silly ways to solve bear's problem. And by the end, he's got all these silly hats on and all these clothes. And bear just sits down and gives up and is like, still have my problem. And a friend comes up to him and says, what is your problem? And it was something nobody expected. It's Ross Green, like, you know, in kids book form. And I would really encourage you to look at the website as well. You know, the books that are coming to your library, you get to read them for free. And the website has just, you could spend hours on the website learning how to do this. So I know that I want to make sure you get some question time. I took a little bit of time for it, or took a little bit of time over. So, questions.
A parent asked, how do you work with schools to implement this philosophy?
Such a great question. So, once you start to learn what works for your child, you're going to find yourself being the biggest advocate for your child. And sometimes, you know, this is a conversation I have with a lot of parents, it feels like you're on this lonely island a lot of times, because this is not an approach that has caught on as quickly as I feel like it's need to be. So the way it typically is, before you start doing this, you get emails home, you get calls home, you get notes home, and it's just this constant report. It feels like tattling, you know, this is what your kid did today, because nobody knows what else to do. You're not at school. You don't know what the unsolved problems are at school. And so what you'll find is necessary is to teach, to be an advocate, to use this language, to get the language down. Unsolved problems, lagging skills. I'll say to you guys, I had this, I think it was a moment in time where my shift, like my life kind of changed in terms of how I think about this. My son went into kindergarten, and I was waiting for it. I knew it was coming. It was probably the second week of school. His awesome kindergarten teacher, who will always be a part of our life because of the impact she had on him, sent me the email. What kinds of things work at home for you? Because it's not working here. I knew it. And you find yourself at a crossroads. Do I be that parent that's always, oh, it seems like I'm making excuses for my child. You know, you shouldn't be expected to meet your expectations because he can't. Or do I go into this whole thing? Lagging skills, unsolved problems, you know, this is what children are like. And so, because you just sometimes can sound like that parent if the person can't buy into that. And I'm thinking, I just met this lady. We really need her. What do I do? And so I wrote her an email that was probably about a mile long and was just like, to answer your question, this is what we do at home. I'm happy to help. I'm happy to meet with you in person. I'm happy to do whatever I can. But basically, this is our approach, and I can't give you specific things, but I'm happy to work with you. And she wrote me an email back and said that she cried writing the email because she started thinking about all the kids in her class and in her previous classes that it applied to. And if she would have had that mindset, she would have dealt with them differently, and she would have thought about them differently. And she always talks about it, and she's spoken to his teachers that have had him and kind of been able to help me advocate for him. So getting these people on your team, it's hard and it feels lonely sometimes, but it's the right thing to do for your child.
A mom asked, my grandmother and the sitter are giving him toys to leave the house without a meltdown, and I feel like it's just too much and I don't know what to do about it.
It's always kind of like a delicate balance where, on one hand, not one thing works in every situation, and on the other hand, you can keep coming back to your child is your number one source of information, because sometimes we skip over it because we think, okay, well, they're kind of a product of their environment, everybody's pulling them along, and they'll do whatever the adults decide. But see if you can shift it, number one. The number one thing I would say to try is work, what's your child's name? Zane. Work with Zane to try to figure out, okay, what's the best time to talk to him? When is he more likely to kind of engage with me and talk with me or share whatever it is, whatever this information is about why it's hard to leave this place, why, you know, what's getting in his way, what is happening? And the more you understand, the more you're on the same page, the more likely it is that he'll be willing to think of something different to do. And so while we don't want to sign off on things that we know that they can't do, because then, you know, we're setting them for failure, again, go back to that idea that doing well and being able to walk out and please mom is so much more motivating than getting the chocolate muffins or getting the, you know, whatever it is. It is. So for now, for your sanity, no. What you know about him is that will happen right now, right? That will happen, but you have something to work on. You have these things to work on, and you have some strategies, and it starts with him because kids are able to do this with us. We just have to help them through it, and if you find that he's doing very well with it, but the adults are making it very difficult, then that, I would say, will drive, yeah, and you, I mean, you know them best, you know the adults, you know the situation, it may be that you talk to them sooner, maybe you'll start to see your environment differently, and you'll start to feel a little bit more in control to say, hey, look, he's doing really well with this. I know your intentions are so good. Could we hold off on that? Because he's doing this thing, and I think it's making it a little harder for him. They clearly love him. And so I have a feeling that that's what they want for him anyway. So again, it's kind of balancing all these moving parts at once. Yeah. And your goal for him is ultimately to be able to solve those problems himself. That's what you want for your child, is to be able to navigate these situations for themselves, to gain these skills. And so by you working through this with him, then you're teaching him, you're helping him move in that right direction. And so that's where that fear and, you know, that anxiety, we can help calm that down by saying, I'm teaching him, I'm giving him this gift of helping him walk down this road. And so for now, there may be things that happen that make me feel out of control, but I may be able to manage them a little bit easier if I know that I'm giving him what he needs to move with me and solve these problems and feel better and not need those things to navigate life. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm.
A parent said that their child was having problems on a field trip, and it's hard for the child to be able to come home and talk about the experience with the parent after it had happened because too much time had passed.
Does that work for him? Would be my first question. Gotcha. Okay, so the question would be first posed in, hey, notice you were having trouble keeping your hands to yourself the other day, or, you know, but the key is keeping it as specific as possible. Because if you said to him, I notice sometimes you have trouble keeping your hands to yourself, that opens up this big, they don't know where to start with that. Okay, yeah, I guess I do then, if you're saying that. But if you're saying, I noticed the other day on the field trip, you were sitting in the seat with so-and-so, and I noticed you're having a really hard time keeping your hands to yourself. They can envision that. And so getting to the bottom of what was going on. Hearing, oh, I got really excited, we were outside of school, whatever it is that conversation comes to, making sure it's like drilled down very specific, and saying, okay, so putting your concern on the table, which would be whatever, you know, why you want him to keep his hands to himself, why you want to see that behavior go away, and then what's something you can think of that would solve this problem, where next time this happens, hey, we can do whatever differently. Have him come up with, you know, whatever would be intrinsically motivating. Well, maybe I could have something to hold, or maybe I could, whatever he comes up with that would help him want to keep his hands to himself.
The parent then said, I think it's an impulse control problem. And the speaker replied, but did he say it was an impulse control problem? You need to go back to him first and find out what he thinks the problem is.
What did he say? Right. So the skill he may be struggling with is impulse control. That's the skill. Okay. So we want to know what that problem is from his perspective. That would be his concern. And we don't... What's that? Right. And that's the hard part. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's very common. The I don't know makes it so hard. But that's where, and that's something else you'll find on the website. And even you can shoot me an email if you want to as well, and I can help you with that. There are things that you can say. There are ways that you can drive that conversation to help him get from I don't know to what that concern is. Because yes, we know kids poor impulse control. I can't help it, but in order to get to a solution and for him to really have that motivation to do it differently or to figure out how you can set that situation up differently, maybe it's that, hey, maybe he comes up with, I won't sit with that person next time or whatever it is, have confidence in your child because we don't know what they're going to say. Once you have that problem down, see, they've never thought about that before. Most likely, they've never had an opportunity to get it down into these words because it's a sophisticated thing, but you're helping them with this. And so just keep an open mind. A lot of times, most of the time, if not all the time, they can do things that we think that they can't do. And they'll come up, they'll give you information that you never thought. I had no idea, you know, that my husband was being a jerk in the morning to my kid. I didn't know. I was off getting ready. You know, I just didn't know. And that's what happens all the time. That happens all the time. And so if we are driving the conversation with information that we think we know is true, you're driving it in a direction that may not be the right one. So you can use the information you have, kind of if you get stuck or if you need to kind of get creative, but just be careful it's not driving the direction of that conversation. Yeah, so it would be statements like, yeah, it's hard to figure out, isn't it? Sometimes we just, it's like when we think about it, it's hard to, like, let's think about the other day. Let's think about what we were doing. So we got on the bus, and I'm just making all this up. And so then what was happening? Like, what were you doing? So you're asking questions. And everything he says, like, reflect back. Okay, so let me get this straight. You did this, then you did this. And then you did this, and then that's a time where you can get extra questions in and just start getting his mind in this state where he's retelling. Okay, how much do you reflect what he says? Okay. You can also say, yeah, it's so interesting. Sometimes I don't know either, and kind of just sit there. Sometimes silence is a really good tool to have. You know, if what you're doing right now isn't working, one, I would take a look at Ross Greene's website, watch some videos of him doing it. He has some really good things to do, things to say that target that. I don't know, because it is so common. That you will say, oh, that one I think would work. You know, maybe the silence thing, maybe the, huh, that's interesting. You can compare it with another situation, say, well, I notice you do really well in this situation, and I notice when this other thing happens, you have a really hard time with this thing. I wonder what the difference is between these two situations. Stuff like that. It takes a lot of creativity. It takes a lot of thinking fast in the moment, and it takes a lot of practice. Yeah. So, yeah. One.
So a mom asked, how do I help my child who just comes home with bad behavior reports at school?
So one, I would drill that down into something very specific because if your child is struggling throughout the day, that could be broken into 50 unsolved problems. I've noticed you're having a hard time during calendar time in the morning, you know, raising your hand whenever you want to speak. I've noticed you're having a hard time moving from carpet time back to your seat when it's time to do morning work. I've noticed you're having a hard time staying quiet in line when it's time to walk to lunch. I've noticed you're having a hard time. Like, how many expectations is he having a hard time meeting during the day? Yeah, so that each one is an unsolved problem. So when you're picking where to start, just start with the top two or three. Top two or three that are causing problems, and really get to, you know, if he's aware that he doesn't have confidence, right? That's so general. There are things getting in his way that that's a result of these things. That's a result of the problems. That's a result of not being able to meet those expectations. That's what's happening because these things are getting in his way. Does that make sense? Okay. So see if you can, and again, the first 20 times you do this is practice. So don't think that you need to be perfect. You know, kind of like get on the website. See if you, I think the website is the quickest fast track way. Yes, I love the books, read the books. But you want to fast track this, get on that podcast, get on the website, and start practicing those conversations. If you need to table it a little bit, say, okay, yeah, if they don't want to talk right now, be like, okay, yeah, you know what? I can understand. Sometimes I don't want to talk either. Do you want to come back, you know, tomorrow, maybe after school, we can have a snack and talk tomorrow? See if you can schedule a time to talk with them. Be creative. Just see what works for your kid. Not everything works, you know. Does that give you a good place to start? Okay. If you want to talk afterwards, it's fine too. Gotcha.
A parent said, I think my child is too young to be able to do this. I don't think they'd be able to understand why they're doing what they're doing.
Think about it from this perspective first. You can do this with an infant from like all the way to anybody who is not dead. I mean, I hate to say it that way. I mean, just any age. I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, you can do it with anybody, regardless of their age or verbal capacity or, you know, cognitive abilities, just depending on how you can communicate with them. So think about an infant. What's their number one way to communicate? Usually they cry. And so while you can't say, I've noticed you're having a tough, but you can kind of say, huh, what's happening in this moment? What might be the problem here? You can try different things, and that's usually what we do. We won't perhaps always know if we did the right thing, but if the problem's seemingly gone, then we think we solved that problem. So using that information, I would say, one, sometimes kids do really well with stories. Sometimes they do really well. You can use pictures. Sometimes you can just kind of say, huh, okay, saying stop doing this isn't working. I don't think they have the skills or the ability to develop those skills right now. I need to rearrange some things. Maybe not letting them near this dog right now, or maybe, you know, somehow. And a lot of the times it may feel like that is a lot of work for me to change our environment to that degree. I don't think I can do that. That's where you need to get creative, you know. Some families can't really be together for a long time. Some families have to do separate activities for a long time. And it's not ideal, yet what's going on now may not really be ideal either. So which are you going to pick is really what it comes down to. So again, it's one of those things where there's all these working parts coming into play. Where's your child at with skills, abilities, development, and how can you get to the bottom of that problem based on what they can do, and how can you work together based on their abilities to solve it in a way that's not, I'm prescribing a solution, and then you get punished if you don't conform to my solution because it doesn't work, right? If anybody has, if you need to go pick up your kids and come back and ask questions, I'll be here. If you don't and you want to ask questions, I'm here as well. So.